welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is a style of game in which minimal character limitations are placed on the player, allowing the player to roam and change the world at will. In contrast to a progression-style game, it emphasizes roaming and allows the player to select tasks instead of featuring segmented areas or linear levels.
What's that one from?
A sandbox game definition, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So just open. And the reason that came up is they were talking about that's what they wanted to do with the D&D Essentials kit.
Okay.
Is make that starting city in this original starter more of a sandbox. So if you played the starter set already, you could go back to that. And choose new tasks or new quests or new adventures from that. Give the characters a lot of choice and leave it very open. Yeah, so I thought that was a funny, yeah. Because sandbox has become very common in video games. Like John and I were talking about last week, it's a little difficult in role-playing, and especially role-playing where you're not given a lot of role-playing hints or suggestions or agendas or connections to characters, because like, what do we do? So the GM either has to be pushing you certain ways or doing a lot of extra work because the characters be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's just too many options. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple different things going on there in my mind. The too many options. Yeah. Okay. Analysis paralysis. The players might not know what to latch on to. And yeah, the GM can push the players towards certain agendas or tasks or things that are going on in the sandbox style world. But then the flip side of that is players have to kind of be aware they're playing a sandbox and then find something to get interested in. Because at the end of the day, this is a game, and unless you have your characters get interested in something, we can just sit here and fiddle with dice for 4 hours eat pizza and not play a game.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. Because it lets the characters be inactive. Yeah, it lets them just sit back and say, I'm going to wait until something happens to me because I don't know what I want to do. Yeah.
In which case, someone breaks down the door with the fantasy version of machine guns and shoots up the place
to
make the characters get involved.
So how about you this week? Any gaming updates?
First of all, I'm over whatever sickness got me out of last week. And unfortunately, the last session of the Alien RPG. While we're on that topic, what level of Patreon supporter do I have to become to get John to read all of my stuff? Because their voice sounds a lot better than mine. They also come off as a lot smarter than I do. Because they busted out that, ludocognitive dissonance in games. And I'm just like, wow. If it was me, I'd be like, words coming out of my face that hopefully make sense.
But, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get John back on to discuss stuff because I really liked his perspective on things, and having a gap in his kind of gaming career, he played younger and then played older, and like how much more you mature and like what you want differently from games.
Think about it. I think that was actually me as well, because there was mostly during university and stuff, I didn't play all that much. And then coming here is kind of when I started up again seriously. But correct me if I'm wrong, was it the Hollow Earth Expedition game that we
did? I think so. I think
it was kind of like the first.
Yeah.
Where we all played together.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah, that was really fun too. His character, like right away I knew he's going to be fun at the table because of how he played his character.
For gaming stuff, I am running a one-shot of The Sprawl, the Powered by the Apocalypse cyberpunk game that we've talked about before, for the Kansai International Gamers Guild meetup at the end of this month.
Oh, nice.
And as usual, I've prepped nothing. But that's fine because I'm going to run it in the Fantasy Flight Games Android Universe 7 again. And I picked up a while back the mission file supplement for The Sprawl, which is 10 plug-and-play missions. I guess kind of they show what you can do with the tool set in kind of an expanding way and how you can play with things, but they also work just really well as one-shot game ideas. So I've got that in my pocket, and currently only two players, so we'll see what happens.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I saw that you'd gotten that kind of supplemental book for The Sprawl. Yeah, so they're good, the plug-and-play adventures.
I haven't read all of them. Uh-huh. I just kind of looked at the first two, and I was also more interested in seeing how the missions played with the elements that got established in The Sprawl. So like the ways you can make the directives more complex or kind of branching, or have competing teams, kind of do stuff. So
that's good. Yeah, I was really happy in our sessions how well the Android world worked for The Sprawl.
It just works really well.
That's really nice. Yeah. Because of playing Netrunner, we knew those characters. We knew that stuff. So you can kind of have a real good idea of the world you're in.
Yeah, it's a nice shorthand for stuff, which isn't the case with the people I play with at the one shot. But it's nice to kind of have an established setting in that case, because it kind of cuts down on the amount of time that would be kind of like a session zero,
right,
which is important in a one shot.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. And you don't have to come up with so much off the top of your head if players are asking you questions about the world. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So how about you?
So I was online with Nick, and we got some review copies of the Infinity RPG. So the Corvus Belli miniatures game, Infinity RPG is produced by Modiphius, so it's 2d20. Mm-hmm. And online, over Discord, we rolled characters.
Oh, cool.
It's more similar to Conan, a very extended, it's a life path system. So it's a very extended, like 12-step system of character creation. So similar to Traveler, you can die during character
creation. That was exactly what I was going to ask. Can you die during character creation?
But in this world, you're reinserted into another body. But the mechanic for that is you have to pay. So you get 5 points at the beginning that you can spend either at the end to kind of tweak things or during character creation. So every time you die, you can re-roll all of your stats with disadvantage, with a negative every time you've died, or spend the point to keep the same stats that you had before. So if you're kind of aiming towards something, because every event, so the life path has these stages of events like your class and homeworld and setting up the who you're affiliated with, what planet you came from, and then events in your schooling and then work events. And so as a young child, I got involved in criminal. I was a smuggler for a little while and was murdered by some compatriots as a smuggler. And then I died later on again, but the death was famous.
Liv was famous.
Yes. So then the rest of my rest of my character had to steer into celebrity.
Oh,
so
interesting.
I went heavily into my second career was corporate. So I was a smuggler in my youth that was murdered, died famously, and came back as a corporate powerhouse. It gives you really strange combinations of things that you're going to have to, you know, figure out how does that work in this world and in this setting. It's good. It's good in a really unexpected way. And I'm playing like a faction that I wouldn't have even thought to play. And the corporate thing worked really well with this particular faction because they're very heavy technology. But it's fun. Nick is going to run just a game over Discord, and we're just going to kind of get a feel for the system and see how it works, because he's got a pretty good handle on the lore and the setting from the miniatures game, and just has to kind of get his head around the mechanics for the 2d20, because it's got the same kind of momentum. And And it's, I forget what it's not Doom points, but it's like the points that the currency that the game master spends against the players. So similar to that. And
drama points or something.
Yeah, right. And they keep coming out with new source books that add the different faction homeworlds, and maybe, I think similar to Conan, allows you to make characters with different careers and kind of, so you can make new original characters, or you kind of respec or kind of add career stages to your character to make them a privateer or something.
Kind of sounds like what I've heard of Old Traveler, at least in the different kind of like source books, extra careers and stuff you can do.
I think that works well in science fiction, because science fiction is just so open to be like, oh yeah, and you go from here to here, and this planet has this. But like the Robert E. Howard Conan world, where you had like, oh, I was a farmer, then I was a soldier, then I was your like, really? You know,
well, I mean, Conan had how many jobs? Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, he's been everything.
Right.
I mean, I think, getting into it, I think that was more of the style of the era where, you know, he was a Mary Sue, the Conan character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, okay, sure, most of the time he was successful more than with luck than anything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, how many times when reading Conan short stories has he been like, oh, well, we got to go here. And it's like, oh, great, because I was a ruler of a whatever chieftain in this area, and they're going to remember me. And you're like, really? Really?
Right.
I mean, you've been everywhere and done everything and know everybody.
Right.
So if you're playing Conan, it totally fits.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because that's kind of necessary for pulp storytelling. He doesn't want to wander into a unknown situation all the time. And to have the character be famous or infamous, you know, gives them so much more weight and they're more interesting to read.
But I guess, like, thinking about it now, that also gives him connections, or gives the character connections, irregardless of where you go.
Yes.
Because that's the thing about playing D&D. If you want to play like a slightly more social game, you kind of have to tie it to a single location, because as soon as you wander out of that location, nobody knows you.
Yeah, yeah.
And being famous and having traveled to all these different places and having those connections wherever you go gets around that problem.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Forbidden Lands had an interesting fame mechanic where as you do things, people start to know you, and you have a stronghold. So you're building a stronghold. And then so once people start to know you, then they start to know your stronghold. Then you start getting sacked and attacked by different tribes. So I think it's a difficult thing to manage, and having kind of a light, more abstract mechanic is probably the easiest way to do it. But yeah, I think that's a fun part of role-playing. But yeah, it's hard to figure out kind of how much weight to give it. Kind of starting with what we were talking about at the beginning, a little bit of sandbox. We brought up last week talking about the two types of of role-playing. For a future topic, I think that is an interesting thing, you know, because things do seem to be kind of moving between dice-heavy,
right,
you know, traditional role-play and then role-play as far as storytelling, collaborative right. storytelling versus kind of dice-based min-maxing type things. I think there's a lot there, and people definitely are now have preferences. You really see players that don't, you don't move back and forth between different systems, because once you, and we were talking about Monster Hearts last week, once you really feel the power of that collaborative storytelling and what everybody's input does to kind of spiral character interactions in really unexpected and interesting ways, it's hard to go back to, okay, this session we're just going to fight a bunch of goblins.
Well, with that affectation and that kind of enthusiasm, then yeah. I may have mentioned it on the podcast before, but I tend to think that RPGs rule systems kind of fall along a gradient or like a scale. At one end, you have pure rules for keeping things fair. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have sort of pure table consensus for keeping things fair. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any game is a perfect example of either extreme, but they definitely skew more towards one end or the other,
right.
Like Adventurer Society or whatever an organized play would be. You're going to have to go rules because things have to be identical right. across multiple games. Home games or games that are intended to be played more at home can skew more towards the collaborative, but that kind of ties in with the two types of role players. There are definitely people who prefer things to be outlined in rules, and they can say, no, this is how the game kind of should be played.
Yes.
And unless and until we agree to change these rules, let's all abide by them.
Mm-hmm.
And other people prefer to say, okay, well, let's all just decide right now how this is going to get resolved. And some people maybe like both, but I can definitely see a preference for one or the other. The fact that I often play, though not so much anymore, other games like Kill Team or Mobile Frame Zero or Netrunner, that scratched my sort of rules-heavy technical itch, which is why, personally, I don't feel the need for it in my role-playing games.
Mm.
But as I've discussed with other people, lots of them don't have that distinction or have those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so to scratch both of the itches, they prefer the sort of the more rules-heavy, and I use that term kind of loosely, systems, because it does both of those things for them.
Mm, that's interesting. That's a really good point, too. If you have another activity, another game you're playing, that you are just kind of tweaking mechanics and building building kind of machines to win in certain situations, that does take care of that. So when you can be pure role-playing.
Mm, I don't have any Kickstarters, because I'm trying to save money, which is not going well at all. But I do have a game, and along the more collaborative storytelling, game I recently picked up is Monolock by Ben Chong, which I believe was part of the Emotional Mech Jam, which happened a while back, or also known as like the Sad Mech Jam, where you were supposed to submit a game that was about mechs or mecha pilots in some way, but focusing more on the emotions of the pilots rather than actual combat.
Mm-hmm.
Monolock is a Jenga tower game, kind of like Dread or Starcrossed, and the premise is you're a team of mecha pilots coming back from a mission with depleted resources and get attacked by some overwhelming predator and have to cut and run.
Oh, nice.
And there's different kind of mechanics. It's pretty simple. It fits on like a single A4 size piece of paper if you shrink it down. Of course, just like in Dread or whatever, when the Jenga tower falls, that pilot dies.
Oh, nice.
And there's all this kind of stuff that kind of goes around it. A lot of it is collaborative storytelling. Like a lot of the setup questions are, what are you coming back from? What did you just do? What does a predator look like? What happens when a pilot dies? What kind of ritual do you have? Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there are no answers kind of provided in the game. It's for the table to collaborate and decide.
Oh, cool.
But it sounds really cool. I'm eager to play it. Although I hate people who tweak games before playing it as is.
Mm.
I read that and I said, this could be adapted for so many other things, like team of supernatural monster hunters running from some kind of overwhelming predator. Or like even, hey, Colonial Marines, you know, clearing out a nest of xenomorphs and the Sarge just bit it. So it kind of looks exciting. I'm eager to play it and I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think with the Colonial Marines, though, you need a black lacquer Jenga tower. So
I thought I saw one somewhere. That would be excellent. Yeah.
Kickstarter this week, I've kind of been waiting for this one. It's been a few months. I've kind of been anticipating, but this is Cool Mini or Not, collaborated with Riot Minds. And so Riot Minds is the Swedish studio that does Trudvang. And so this is Trudvang Legends. So it's a collaborative board game that's trying to simplify, because it's a very crunchy role-playing system, like a lot of the Swedish more old school games are. And these are the guys that originally produced the Swedish version of Dungeons and Dragons, the Demons and Dragons kind of
Demons
adaption.
And Dragons?
Yeah,
is there not a location you explore?
No, it's just monsters and monsters.
Monsters all the way down.
So it's a miniatures board game, cooperative storytelling for 1 to 4 players. The only thing that's a little bit of a turnoff to me is you are drawing runes out of a bag instead of rolling dice for the mechanics. And that's okay because, you know, you spend the runes. It's a little bit different. I was turned off by that in the Fantasy Flight Cthulhu card game where you're pulling...
You're talking Arkham Horror?
The Arkham Horror card game. And you're filling a bag and the more bad things go into it. And it's okay. I think dice are more satisfying, or like trying to mitigate randomness with cards, you know, with a hand of cards, I like a lot better than drawing things out of a bag.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because you tend to, sometimes it gets weird and you draw the same thing weirdly again and again. It's like, this feels broken. And so I'm not a real fan of that, but this seems to be you're drawing kind of points and it's an economy that you can spend.
Okay.
So you're drawing, you know, basically like things that would be mana. You know, you can spend this to power this, you can spend this to power this. So you draw a certain number of runes and it powers what you're doing with the characters. And so maybe that'll be a little bit better, but I don't like drawing one as a result, just as if it was a die roll. That seemed to not work well with the Arkham.
Oh, really?
Game. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, it just wasn't satisfying. I don't know what that was about it. Yeah.
Like I had Arkham Horror, I've sold it, and had a bunch of expansions, and I kind of liked drawing monster tiles from a bag. Some parts of drawing other tokens from a bag did feel unsatisfying, but I've seen several other games where kind of the resolution mechanics are draw tokens from a bag. There's a Yggdrasil board game where I think you do something like that, and based on whether the token is white or black, that says how many warriors you've recruited for your god or whatever. And I actually like that. Especially if there are mechanics to add tokens to the bag, because then I think that's an interesting way to manipulate sort of probabilities and outcomes. And I was actually thinking of adapting that monolock game to like a token draw game, because as cool as Jenga towers are, for some people they're not accessible.
Yeah.
And or they're difficult to play when you have a shaky table with a cat, which we don't, for example, but just you know, possibilities. So I think like tossing certain color tokens into a bag to represent positive effects versus kind of like taking them out to resolve things and maybe putting a subset back. I like how that manipulates the mechanics and it's kind of like tactile and stuff. But I mean, it also depends on the theme of the game, and sometimes that's going to work and sometimes it's going to not. Like the original Deadlands, you draw a poker hand, which is totally appropriate for Old West stuff.
Yeah.
Then when it got ported over to Savage Worlds, my feeling on that game aside, the cards didn't disrupt anything, but they didn't really mesh with anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. And I guess it's because they use that to kind of control difficulty. So if you want to make it more difficult, you put more bad stuff in the bag. And drawing out of a bag makes sense if you're going to have like a finite thing. Like, you know, if you're drawing like reinforcements or something, how you're spawning monsters, you know, there's only going to be so many real big bads in there. Replacing dice, I don't like it as a replacement for dice. I mean, I guess it allows you to customize dice. You know, you don't need this giant tray of all of these like more difficult or less difficult dice. It makes it easier. Curious about this. I've seen a few of the mechanics videos that they do, and it's an Eric M. Lang design game, so it should work well, you know, very well mechanically. But saying that, with the bolt action rules, the activation in the miniatures bolt action system, you draw activation randomly out of a bag. So each player has a certain color die, and you draw that. So it's random activation based on that. And I like that. So that works well. And I think especially because you're thinking about that, you're like, oh, I've got two more activations in there. Is one coming up, or am I going to get two in a row after?
It's when you know the contents of the bag, I think it's more interesting. Or at least have a decent grasp on the contents of the bag, or even kind of probabilities, like, okay, it's half white, half black tokens. We've used up a certain number of whatever color. That's, you know, okay, we've got like a 2-in-1 chance and stuff like that. I mean, not huge numbers, but yeah, I think that makes it more interesting, as you said, kind of knowing what's going to come up, which kind of gets into my whole thing about liking dice pool systems and thinking that they're easier to kind of figure out what your chance of success is, as opposed to kind of the flat math of D20.
Yeah. I may get turned around. We'll have to see. But as far as when I see a bunch of bags and drawing stuff, I'm like, is that replacing dice? Okay. I mean, it makes sense. For some reason, it was unsatisfying the few times that I've used it. So the big thing that I'm excited about this game, drawing tokens out of a bag aside, is it's going to be a bunch of miniatures based on all the Paul Bonner art Trudvang. And it's amazing. Like it's a limited bestiary in the game. So there's not a huge array of monsters, but they're all very thematic and they all fit very well in that setting. So it's all Celtic, Scandinavian origin monsters. So just a lot of giants and ogres and trolls. I can't wait to see his art in 3D. That'll be exciting. And especially the player miniatures are really nice too. So for actually playing the role-playing game, which I gotta get somebody to be interested in. But as far as playing the role-playing game, I think that'll add a lot. We'll have some really cool.
So you want someone to run this Druidfang?
No, I'll run it. Yeah, okay. I'll run it. I just like everyone I've talked to be like, sounds a little crunchy because it is. It's very, yeah.
As long as you're running it, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking too, after doing this alien session, because character creation is pretty rough in that game as well, I might, based on this board game, based on like the types of characters they've done in this board game, try to come up with a way to do pre-generated characters and just have people.
For the true adventure.
Yeah, yeah. So that the session zero isn't like, oh my God, we spent how many hours making these characters? Just give some characters that you can kind of customize and tweak, but give them the roles that they, that might work well in the adventure and things.
No, I think that's always a nice thing to do. And yeah, especially for the more rules heavy game or the more involved character creation rules, especially for one shot to new players. I think providing something that's almost completely finished or pre-built and still giving them meaningful choices, but not overwhelming them with the number of choices they have to make is a really good thing to do, especially if you're playing like a one shot.
Yeah. So I'll try to make it more tempting and put something like that together because this won't be out until next year, this board game. And actually, I don't know why I'm even talking to you about it because they don't need your support. I think they need like $500,000 in like 10 minutes. Like,
oh, really? Okay, this that
company,
much.
This company is like really good at Kickstarters. Yeah. But the thing I love about supporting the cool mini games is they ship them direct from China. So Japan always gets them first. Yeah. But I'm really excited. It's going to be a lot of new art. Mechanics of the game seem fun. So it'll be a fun, casual board game. But then it's also so much content for actually doing fun role playing.
Oh, that's cool.
We got a question, or is there a comment? We got a comment on the YouTube video, and it was actually last week's week.
Oh, really?
When we were talking about define the GM.
Okay.
Yeah, like a character saying, no, that doesn't happen to me. This is what my character does.
Right.
Whether that's okay and kind of the social contract of being at the table together and can you do that or you just have to kind of how okay is that to just and not in a on a personal level but on a character level, like your idea of your character, that wouldn't happen to them, how hard should you fight and should you just make sacrifices for the benefit of everybody at the table, the benefit of the story. And so we had a comment that made an interesting point that I'm not sure if you're going to agree with, but they said they think GMs should always create characters so they can create a cohesive game world, challenge the players, and so that the players have some emotional distance from their characters. Because the earlier part of the comment talked about, you know, people are so attached that they need to be the center of the story. Everything needs to be about them. And they'll create a character that they like regardless of how it fits into that world, so that it's actually ruining the setting, ruining the storytelling. And so what do you think?
I love your expression when you pitched me that question because you knew I was going to disagree. The person who left that comment obviously had a not great experience in a game. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they probably would not have left that comment.
Right.
So I certainly agree that there are times when, or certain players who can get too wrapped up in their own characters or make characters who don't really fit the type of game or the campaign you're playing or whatever, and that can lead to problems. But that's why I would push for session zero.
Right.
Where everyone sits down, the GM says, here's the type of game I'm thinking of running. What type of characters would you want to play? Mm-hmm. And then you bounce things off each other and there's give and take between like both parties and all sides so that the end is a game that everyone enjoys with characters that do fit and the players enjoy playing. Mm-hmm. For one shot, sure, the GM can make characters, as we just kind of discussed, maybe give players some input into the types of things they want to play.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know if I agree with that comment.
I think in the Alien, in that cinematic adventure that we did in Alien, that the distance was good because you knew how deadly the environment was. If you're precious with that those characters, it might be really difficult. So I'm curious to see. We haven't seen the rules yet for the Alien cooperative play.
Oh, you're talking about campaign play.
Campaign has cooperative rules. So there's not going to be traitor mechanics. There's not going to be things that are putting your characters aren't going to be so much in danger. I think it's going to be more survival mechanics, more working together to solve problems. Whereas in the cinematic, you're kind of working against each other to solve problems, your own problems. It's an interesting difference, and it's just a different style of play. But yeah, I think it does just depend on your group and age too. I think like the younger the players are, the more they're like, hey, I want to be the star. Mm. You know, I think that why am I playing this if I'm not the star? I think that tends to.
Which I think is fine. I mean, we call it spotlight time, or I've heard it referred to as that. And yeah, GMs and other players too should ensure that every player gets spotlight time during the game. Everyone enjoys playing their character. Otherwise, why are you playing that character? Everyone kind of wants, you know, that spotlight time. Mm-hmm. As adults, you also understand that there are other people playing this game. And sometimes you kind of have to make, sacrifices. That seems like a heavy word, but you have to agree that, okay, someone else has a spotlight for right now. Or, there's this thing I'd want to do, but it really messes up what this other player wants to do. So let me not do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about things that, you know, kind of would like break up a game group, but you do have to make allowances that other people are playing this game with you and not make decisions that are going to completely throw things off the rails. And I think you're right. It sounds kind of pompous, but being kind of mature about it helps in that regard. Back to the alien thing. I am almost convinced that you can't do a cooperative mode in that game.
Oh, really?
As impressed as I was with the cinematic mechanics, I look at that game going, what is campaign mode going to look like?
Right, right.
Where things are, you're going to play the character across an entire campaign. The threat of death, I guess, is always going to be there, but I'm like, I don't know how you're going to do that.
I think I haven't read anything, but based on the materials that they're providing in kind of the bigger deluxe set, it's similar to Forbidden Lands, where you're crawling a hex map of like locations on planets. So you'll have like you'll be a crew with a mission, and whether you're going to be a crew comprised of colonial marines or scientists or, you know, whatever the mission is. And I think it's going to be a lot about surviving what you deal with, and it has to be a balance of, you know, people kind of working together. But yeah, I don't know. It's because every corporate character would have to be an NPC, because they're against you, so it'd be impossible to play that. Yeah, collaboratively.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah.
Or I guess just make everybody corporate characters, and you just screw over all the NPCs as hard as you can. So I'm really interested to see that too. So that's coming out later this year, and we'll have a review of the cinematic starter, and then also kind of a debrief kind of campaign confessions. I really want to get everybody's opinion about what we went through with that game, and if they like that style and if they like the system. Hopefully we'll have something like that up soon on the YouTube channel, so you can see. And if you've watched any of the actual plays, it'll be fun to actually hear.
I'm looking forward to
reactions.
That.
If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
On Twitter, as always. And it's funny, last week John gave a Twitter handle, and I'm like, yeah, that's right, I never know how to spell it, and I always just have to like search my mentions for something they responded to. But mine is Hivemind, HYVEMYND. I'm pretty much always on Twitter. My Patreon, fantasticfateresources.com. July's reward for patrons should be up by the time this goes up.
Okay.
And it's an aboleth.
Nice.
Which I may have made way too powerful.
Excellent. Well, give them their money's worth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Over a super powerful monster.
Including a warning. Don't actually use this against your players. Yeah.
You can follow Otto Red Hands at Otto Red Hands, and also the website, OttoRedHands.com, where you can find the podcast, access to our videos, download reference materials, everything for the games that we're playing, and also the YouTube channel. And also Instagram. Find Otto Red Hands on Instagram. And if you want to get involved in the podcast, have some input about what we do, what we review, and the types of games we play, please visit patreon.com/OttoRedHands and become a patron. So that's it for this week, and we will see you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
chance I'll